My name is Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom to 4 kids, ages 2 through 9, and we are learning how to make joy normal.
My name is Bonnie Landry, and I want to welcome you to season 2 of our podcast, Make Joy Normal. We want to thank everybody for their support and how much you've shared this podcast with your friends and those who you think it would be helpful for. I am a wife, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I've been homeschooling for 30 years. My kids are ages 14 to 33. I only have one at home now. I'm a speaker, a writer, a blogger, and I guess we're podcasters now, Elizabeth. And I'm an advocate of joy, so welcome to our podcast. Okay, welcome. I just want to say a big welcome to Alice, who is here with me because her Instagram page really caught my attention. So welcome, Alice.
Hi, it's lovely to be here.
Yeah, super excited to have you. So just recently, you caught my attention because you made a comment on a giveaway I was doing. And I thought, oh, this person hasn't caught my eye before. And I went on your Instagram page and you are the travel mom. I was super impressed with your Instagram page, which is beautiful, but also just the way you described yourself, obviously very adventurous mom, very adventurous parents. And I thought, okay, this would make a great interview. So I just thought maybe she'll interview and reached out and you said yes. So here we are. I would like to just, I'm just going to read off the bio that I have for you because it tells us a lot about you. Mom of 3, how old are your kids?
They are 12, 10, and 7.
Okay. And you're a speech therapist, photographer, and traveler. And Alice has been taking her children backpacking since they were born. Now, catch this. Across 6 continents through 49 countries, for the past 3.5 years, Alice and her husband have been living and working in Argentina and slow traveling South America. Alice is now adapting to cozy learning on the road, cozy homeschooling back in the UK. And I think I somehow play into the cozy word a little bit, right?
Absolutely, 100%.
And happiest when she's saying yes to adventure, which is fantastic. I actually sat down with my daughters to have coffee this morning, my adult daughters who have young kids, and said, hey, you guys, I want to come up with some questions for this mom that I'm interviewing. And they had some great questions. So I wanted to start with mine, which was more, what motivated you? So you're originally from the UK, right?
Yes.
Okay.
From England. And actually, I had quite a, I guess, life-changing experience as a teenager, which I think did set us on quite a different course for the rest of my life. That was that I decided to use my grandfather's inheritance money to go on a trip to Africa with our church youth group. I was 17 at the time. And interestingly, when I then started university, I met my now husband in the very first week at university. And we'd got talking about Africa somehow and discovered that he also had had a very life-changing experience at the age of 17, also in a rural village in East Africa. So we then decided to, you know, meet up in Starbucks and talk about Africa. And that's
the rest is history.
But I think the reason it had such a huge impact on both of us was because to have that opportunity at such a young and impressionable age to be transported to a place where everything that we knew of the current culture that we were trying to fit into was completely different. You know, the food, the clothing, the way everyone spoke, the way their houses were, the way they schooled, transport, everything. It just initially, you know, you kind of felt like, oh, we've got absolutely nothing in common with anyone here. And then somebody would give you a warm hug, or you'd sit having a meal by an open fire and talking, or play hide and seek with the kids, and suddenly realize that actually, when all of those cultural norms and dressings were stripped back, what you were left with what it really meant to be human. And it was
sending just wow.
But I think, you know, when we sort of realize that there are so many things that get in the way of modern day society, and I think some people are really good at not getting bogged down in that and keeping life really simple and prioritizing those kind of simple, meaningful connections with nature and with people. But we realized we suddenly had this amazing tool that when everything felt complicated and we needed to make big decisions about things, or we could just strap on a backpack and go with nothing but what we could carry on our backs and just take off and be able to have these amazing deep connections with people and in nature, but also just learn so much about what it meant to grow up in a different part of this planet. I just think it created some very deep connections for us.
What a very, really an incredible decision to make at that age with your grandfather's inheritance, because if you had been 3 or 4 years older, it might have all just been, okay, well, that's how I'm going to pay for my university. If you'd been 30, well, that's how I'm going to buy a home or whatever. There could have been a lot of different decisions made along the way, but only at, you know, 16 or 17, we're probably wild enough that we would just think, no, this is what I need to do with this.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think then it meant that we continued to prioritize travel, even when it was really illogical and irresponsible too. Yeah. And so, you know, we kept, every time we had any savings, we would keep taking off backpacking. And then we actually, when we both fully qualified, we had worked with lots of different charities and organizations, particularly on the continent of Africa, that we then decided to just quit our jobs and go traveling for a year. It ended up being 15 months. We spent 10 months in Africa and then 5 months traveling around Asia. But it was just the most incredible experience. And to have had that time together, just the two of us doing so much learning and growing. And actually the only reason we came back in the end was because we found out that I was pregnant with our firstborn. So like, okay, now's probably the time that we should at least semi-settle somewhere for now.
Right, yeah. So, but that didn't last long, it sounds like.
No, well, yes. I mean, it did in that we then stayed in England for quite a while, but it definitely had already set us on a course for travelling. And I think we talked so much about having a family and thinking, well, if it had such an impact on us traveling as teenagers, imagine what it'd be like if we took our children backpacking as young children. And we always want them to be safe and healthy, but we also want them to grow up knowing that they're not going to find true happiness and joy in stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, there are many ways to find happiness and joy, but one tool that we can give our children is their ability to be able to slow travel, to live simply, that confidence to be able to learn from other cultures and to know that we don't have all the answers, that they can learn so much from other people too. But of course, those were all of our ideals. And as we know, like the ideals, you know, everyone's the best parents until they actually have a child. And I felt like we were the best traveling family until we actually were a family. And then it was a very steep learning curve. So
yeah. Well, some of my daughter's questions definitely revolve around that, which I'll get to in a moment. So would you say that wanting to travel with your children was what led you to homeschooling, or was that other way around, like homeschooling allowed you the opportunity to travel?
Well, it's been quite a long journey, the homeschooling one, because when we were young, when the kids were younger, and for me, I didn't know a single family that homeschooled, nobody. So when the children were tiny preschool, it was so easy. We could just pack them up and travel at any time. And then they started school and we realized that every year we were just living for the holidays when we could travel with them again. And they were so happy and so settled when we were traveling. We were learning so much, and then we were coming back to our kind of regular life, and they were in school. And I remember at one point when Archie said to me, I just don't want to go to school because it's really boring. And I was thinking, what? Because I had really enjoyed school, but I was like, okay, learning can be challenging, it can be difficult, but boring. Like, it shouldn't be boring. So, but like I say, I didn't know anything about homeschooling and how that would work. But I did know about world schooling, and I'd seen other, as part of a really lovely group of kind of other travel mums on Instagram. And I saw this idea of being able to world school, where you could kind of take another grown-up gap year with your children, 1-2 years, and be able to travel and learn on the road. So we talked about it so much, and I was like, this is what we should do. And Carl was like, I completely agree. But we spent a year trying to figure it out, like, how do we make this work financially? Because we could rent our house out, but if we now both quit our jobs again, they're not going to be very happy about us coming back in a year's time, having traveled and, you know, just offer them back to us again. But then we wouldn't be able to pay our mortgage if we didn't have our jobs. And it suddenly felt so much harder with young children that we were responsible for. Like, how do we make this work? And then suddenly Carl got this opportunity to go to Argentina with work. And we're like, okay, this is it. Like, we now can go with work, but have this opportunity to continue to travel and explore. But part of the package he was offered was also international schooling for the kids. And I was like, oh, I just don't know. I don't know if that's not this kind of lifestyle on the road that I was imagining. But again, I didn't have any role models of how to make it work. So I spoke to the teachers at the international school and they were like, oh, it's completely fine. You know, they were all these like amazing young teachers from all around the world. And they were like, we understand all your children are in elementary. Just travel when, you know, that's what we're here for too. And as long as they're keeping up with what they're learning, you can just dip in and out. So we started doing that, and you know, it was amazing. They would give us a bit of the curriculum that we needed to teach, and then we would go on these amazing adventures. And I loved the routine of it, that for like an hour in the morning we'd sit and do some maths or do some writing, and they'd do a journal, and then we'd go and explore, and then in the evening we'd sit and talk about everything we'd learned and read together. And then we'd come back from these trips and they go back into school again. And I was like, oh, you know, just really missing them.
And really a jarring life change too, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But also both of us were working and trying to, you know, figure out and just adapting to living in this other culture and living in Buenos Aires. So it's like, okay, but we kept saying, okay, but as soon as this contract comes to an end in Argentina, then we'll do the world traveling, and then I get to homeschool full time or world school full time. When COVID happened and everything went online, it was like, oh gosh, this is not home. Like, this now is, it was this amazing opportunity, I guess, to realize that that was not homeschooling, what was happening with all the online learning at home, and realizing that how do I make this lovely, cozy experience of traveling on, of learning on the road, how do I do this full time? And I literally did start Googling, looking at podcasts and Googling, like, how do you homeschool in a really lovely, safe, you know, nice environment? How do you do this? And then I suddenly saw your, you know, make joy normal, cozy homeschooling. And I was like, that's it. This is what I'm looking for. It was a really amazing thing for our family to realize that it was possible to do that, and to be able to bring everything that we'd learned from traveling on the road, then to be able to full-time homeschool,
right,
even when we were stuck in our house in Argentina and not able to go anywhere, but kind of combine everything we'd learned with all the things that I was then learning from, you know, your wisdom and experience. It became, yeah, it's been a really exciting journey this past year and a half.
Isn't it interesting too, because when we think of the sort of world schooling life, how perfect is that, or you know, being a traveling family, how perfect is that for mm-hmm. the learning environment? I mean, everything is just yes. inherent in what you do, right? What a shame yes. to sort of have a program, you know, in a sense that you have to complete the program before you can actually do your real learning.
Yes.
You know, because there's absolutely. Just so much unbelievable learning that happens through travel, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. And,
yeah. So do you have a home base? Like, do you own a home that's where you go back to in between various travels?
Yes. So now when we were in Buenos Aires, we had a home in Buenos Aires that we came back to, and then we'd go off on another adventure and then come back to there. We still have our house in England. So we've had this rented out or Airbnb'd out for the last 3.5 years. And now we've just come back to this house, but also at the same time put it on the market, because realizing that we'd like a plot of land now and a farm, and we wow. need a different kind of base. Having had the experiences of the last 4 years, we kind of feel like, yeah, we need another, our family life is adapting again, and
yeah,
you know, this is kind of what we feel we need, a more sustainable space to be coming back to into in a base, a much more sustainable base, I guess.
Yeah. And sort of the idea of traveling kind of in the off season when you don't need to be gardening and whatnot.
Yes. Okay. Yes, absolutely. And also just doing more road trips and exploring a lot more of where of the area that we live, as well as further afield. You know, that realize, I think that was one of the big things learning that we've learned over the last few years, is we always dreamt of giving our kids both wings and roots, and I feel like we've done a really good job of giving them wings and making them very confident in lots of different environments, but also realizing that for the next couple of years we need to really help them to have deep roots here and with their grandparents and their and with my sisters and their cousins, and you know, sort of to have that too, although it definitely means we're not going to carry on traveling, because that becomes such an important part of our life, and it's still the kind of basis of all of our learning. Yeah. I've got a big birthday cup. We always travel for each of our birthdays rather than presents or parties, and I'm turning 40 this month, so COVID rules depending, we're hoping to go to Iceland, and so it's amazing. It's like all of our learning, everything we're doing at the moment, is all about earth science and volcanoes and Iceland, just ready for going there and being able to explore it. So
Well, it's interesting, you know, I had this, I mean, COVID, we had a trip booked to Greece that was supposed to happen the September after COVID happened. Of course, we're thinking, oh, by September, things will be so normal. No. Just backburnered it. Greece will be there in 5 years or however long it takes for us to get back to normal. But I was driving just what day is it? It's Tuesday. On Sunday morning, I was driving down the highway on our beautiful island, and I was feeling a bit sad, you know, that what if it's never really back to normal? What if life is never as we know it again? And then I thought, you know, I live in one of the most naturally beautiful places in the world, and I can just spend my time exploring this, because I could spend my whole life exploring Vancouver Island, British Columbia, and Canada and never exhaust it. It's just too big. I thought, okay, I don't need to be sad about that anymore. Right? Because of where I live. So yeah, it's, you know, COVID really changed everything for us. I'd like to go to my daughter's questions, because I think they just were really good. So one of the ones was, what are the most family-friendly countries you've visited?
Ooh. I would say number one is probably Sri Lanka.
Really?
We went when my youngest, it was the first trip we did with all three of the kids backpacking, when Lottie was probably 10 months old. It's just the most amazing country, because it's very small. It's only the size of Ireland. So very easy to explore all of it. But within one country, you've got beach and tea plantations and mountains. You've also got jungle areas with wild elephants, and then you've also got these beautiful little towns. I mean, it's like a place that has almost, you know, everything, and amazing treks that you can do, and the way that it's set up to make it like sustainable to travel is you have drivers. You're not allowed to drive in that country, which is also quite a relief when you've got a young family juggling and just then trying to be like, you know, following maps and roads, and but because of the safety of the roads, they have, you know, their taxi drivers, they're the only drivers that are allowed, but all the accommodation is then set up for you to drive with a driver and then stay with a driver, with your driver, for different trips, and you can, depending on your budget and how long you've got. So that was an amazing experience. We actually met up with another family, really good friends of ours that were living in Thailand, and we went together as two families and stayed in just beautiful homestays in people's homes. They cooked us meals while we were there, and we just learned so much, just so much from such a, you know, just because we felt we could really thoroughly explore a very small island and a completely different culture. So yes, I'd say that was definitely one of my favorites.
Relative to, say, European travel or North American travel, how does it compare price-wise to go to Sri Lanka?
Oh, much more reasonable. So, yes, I mean, I think anything compared to Europe is probably more reasonable. Yes, it was much more like the cost of traveling around Thailand or India, but felt a lot safer and a lot less touched. And the food is a combination of kind of Indian Thai food as well, which was just delicious, like amazing. So yeah, I think it's like a big trip somewhere with a family of any age.
How long did you go to Sri Lanka for?
We were there for 3.5 weeks. Yeah, and could have stayed for a lot longer, definitely. But our friends were only there for 2 weeks and felt like they had experienced, you know, they still got to see a lot of it and really understand it well in 2 weeks.
And so what is the hardest age to travel? What did you find? So in my world, we didn't really travel much with our kids when they were younger. We went on lots of trips, like holidays. And that in itself mm-hmm. is, a, you know, there's some skill and some learning curve involved even in that. But because I was, you know, pregnant a lot, the idea of traveling when I was pregnant was very unappealing. But we wanted family holidays. We think that those, you know, exclamation points, for lack of a better word, in your life, you know, we went on this holiday together, we went on this trip together, we did this thing together, are really, really important sort of binders of memory, points in your life that are, that, you know, you go through your day to day and you can't always pull. Oh, this was my favorite part of my life, was when my mom read to me on the couch, you know, because hours and hours and hours are spent doing that. And yet it's those punctuation marks that really stand out in our minds, you know, our fun we had together on a family holiday. And we remember the kids' ages and whatnot as well, right? I only went on sort of easy holidays when my kids were small. And it wasn't until they got older that we started venturing out into more and sort of adventurous types of things. So what did you find in a bigger adventure picture way? What was the hardest age to travel with and why?
I think all the birth of travels, it sounds like I'm not answering the question, but I think doing it for the first time of anything is so, always feels just so overwhelming and difficult. And, you know, so we took Archie for the first time to Africa when he was only 6 months old, because we had some really amazing a family there that we had spent so much time with, and they were like, you need to bring us our grandson. We felt like we knew Malawi so well, we'd been there so many times, it was a place that was very comfortable to us. But arriving at the airport with this tiny baby, it felt like I was seeing Africa for the first time again through the eyes of a mother. It was so overwhelming. It was terrifying. I was suddenly like, oh my goodness, what have we done? And what if he gets sick? I don't know how to sterilize anything. Like, this is not, you know, it's a whole different ball game traveling with children. And I think it was mostly, I mean, he was obviously completely fine. He was with us. He didn't care where he was. It was all the learning that I had to do. And so I think we were on a very steep learning curve every time we added another child to the mix of just organization and, you know, what were the priorities to have to carry in for each of the children. You know, one of them bringing cuddly toys was really essential in how well he could settle. For the others, it wasn't. And, you know, just kind of getting to know the kids in different environments. I think in terms of gear and what you have to bring, in many ways, you know, when they're under one, they should be the easiest because you can just attach them to you, but actually as soon as they're crawling, you sort of have that window, like before crawling, where they can go anywhere with you, and then after crawling is really hard until 18 months. That's like a brutal stage in the kind of extra activities that you need to bring with you in order to keep them safe. And we ended up being like door bouncers and attaching them to trees and stuff when they were little, so that there's somewhere that we could put them where they weren't going to eat everything on the floor. The age that we found easiest has by far been between the age of 2 and 10, where they're just so happy to be with us all the time. You know, they're toilet trained. There's no need to worry about nappies or beakers, or they can eat everything. And yet they don't, you know, they don't have all of their other social life or anything else that they're missing or leaving behind.
Right.
So luckily for us, that's been really the majority of the time that we were in South America. And I feel like we've really maximized, you know, really wanted to try and maximize everything about that time.
Right. So they can kind of have it all, in a sense.
Yeah. And we can have it all with them. You know, they're so enjoyable at that age because they're so wide-eyed, wonder of everything, but also still want to snuggle in bed in the evenings and read a book together. And, you know, it's really beautiful age. I think once they're all out of that stage, I'm probably going to miss this current stage a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was actually one of the things that we were talking about, was when members of the family need their downtime or their alone time, and you're sort of in a much tighter situation, you know, that sometimes people can agitate each other or whatever, or that sometimes kids kind of just need their toys or there's certain things that they play with. You know, did you find that you didn't need that so much because you were in a new place and the kids were used to that, used to travel? Or did you find you needed to, like you said about the bringing the stuffies, that was really important? Was there other things that sort of made travel life easier that you think, okay, it's just worth it to bring this because the kids will be happier?
Yes, absolutely. So there was always, Lego we brought with us everywhere, because we felt the bottom of a backpack we could fit so much, a whole big bag of Lego, and all three of them would play with that anywhere. So whether it was on the beach or on an aeroplane or, you know, just waiting at an airport or in a car, that would come out constantly. We always had familiar snacks that we would bring in with us for when we first, that we still do, for when we first get anywhere. We'll always make sure that we have those, you know, familiar snacks, and also for if we're going to do a big hike or something that's really pushing them out of their comfort zone, that they know that they've got something nice that's familiar, that they know, a little bribe along the way, you know, 5 hours in, you can have your Kinder Bueno or whatever it is. But I think more probably than the specific things that we brought with us, it was more realizing what as a family everybody needed, and what I needed when we first, because I realized that there was the same pattern every time, that the first 24 hours when I arrived somewhere after a long journey, whether that had been by road or train or plane or whatever, I would have a massive freak out that night. It would get dark, we'd put the kids to bed all in unfamiliar places, and I'd suddenly find spiders and cockroaches or something, and everything is scarier in the dark. And I would suddenly have a big freak out and be like, Carl, what have we done? We've just taken our precious perfect babies and we've dumped them in another crazy place. Like, what are we doing? And is this safe? And I don't even know where the nearest hospital is, and what if they break something? And Carl would be like, okay, just wait till morning when the sun comes up, it's all going to feel okay again. And which was always true, but it made us realize that actually we needed to, whatever our budget was, we would stay somewhere nice that first night, and we would make sure that it was just the five of us. So, you know, even before going to stay with a family in a village in Africa, or a homestay on Easter Island, or an elephant sanctuary in Myanmar, the first thing we would do is settle somewhere, just the five of us, and just get our bearings and try the food without any expectations from anyone else.
Good idea.
And that really kind of helped to just calm us all down, mostly me again, in that first little bit, and feel like, okay, no, it's okay, we've got this, we've made the right decision. And then the other thing is, I think just realizing that, we began to realize, we just cannot learn too much about a place before we go. All the just reading up, making sure all the kids knew exactly where to find it on a map, that we'd read literature about it, we'd seen photos of it, we'd talk them through all the different places we were going to stay. They'd seen photos of anybody we knew we were going to meet there, just kind of helped.
Familiarize.
Yeah. And meant that they felt a lot more confident in first arriving. I think also just making that time every night before we went to bed, again, wherever we were staying, we would make sure that we all sat in bed together and all talked through the experiences of the day and all talked about the plan for the next day. And we still do this everywhere we are, just have that like regroup in the evenings, even if we're in a really busy place with loads of other people around, just to kind of take that moment so that we could check in with all the kids and like, actually, do we need to alter something for one of them? Is everyone okay? And what were the things that have really really sparked their interest and excitement, and how do we then help develop that over the next few days? I think also if I asked the children, they would say that the priority of anywhere we travel is to only visit places with cool animals. That's it.
That's fair. It's a fair comment.
They really cannot see the point of traveling anywhere unless there are cool animals. But actually that has really helped, because it helps them in interacting with the other children there. If there's amazing animals that they can be seeing and exploring and learning about, it helps them in talking to guides and other adults. because, you know, everybody loves amazing animals, don't they?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, do we have amazing enough animals for you to come here?
Oh, it is so on the list. We are definitely coming.
Well, you have to visit us. That would be super amazing. Yeah. If we ever get to travel again, it is an amazing place. And it's very compact too, right? So Vancouver Island's only about the size of Ireland as well. So compact, you know, and there's just a lot. Every area that you would visit on the island is kind of dense with things to see, mostly, you know, of the natural beauty sort. You know, there's, you know, we're sure we love to go to Europe because of the history, right? In terms of natural beauty, you know, we don't have to, you know, we have it in our backyards.
How did you decide on Vancouver Island as where to settle?
Well, I was born here. So, this is really unusual for islanders. I was born here. My dad was born here. My grandfather was born here. My great grandfathers on both sides immigrated here.
Wow.
And so from the UK. So that's definitely one on our hit list as well. So do I have any other questions? Oh, yeah. The downtime. That was a question that I think is really valuable. Did you find different members of your family needed more downtime than they were able to get on a trip?
Yes. I mean, I think often all five of us would be sharing a room. I mean, even just when we came back to the UK, we decided to, as part of our, when we came back to the UK, part of our sort of desire to want to explore more of where we lived as well, we just did a 3-week camper vanning trip all around the UK because we wanted the kids to really understand more of where they're from and, you know, where their roots are. But we just come right off the back of a quarantine hotel, 11 days in one hotel room, not being able to leave, which was horrendous. And then when we said to the kids, okay, we're now going to go in a camper van for 3 weeks, they were like, really? I was just thinking, might be really nice to have my own room for a bit. But actually what we did, and we didn't find they needed this as much when they were little. When they needed downtime, they needed it away from other people. So as long as they didn't mind if it was all five of us still together in a room, what they needed was to know that we were going to close the doors and make a kind of cozy nest for an hour or two where they could just read or draw or play, and they were kind of off duty, because I think our kids are really, really good at meeting people and talking to people and interacting, and especially from being expats in Argentina, they've needed to have those skills because they've come into contact with so many people from different cultures and backgrounds all the time. But they really need the time where they can switch off and they don't have to be the kind of super polite answering all the questions, you know, on. So as long as we shut the door and just said, okay, for the next 2 hours, we're not leaving the room. You can just veg. You can play with Lego. You can draw. You can read. You can do whatever you want. Then that was fine for them when they were little. We're noticing now that my oldest is 12 going on 13, you know, on this camper van trip, he's like, do you mind if we just take a tent? And I'll just sometimes sleep in a tent. And we were like, okay, that's completely fine. And actually both the boys ended up at different points sleeping in the tent, or a couple of nights one of us would sleep in the tent with my middle one, and then Archie would have more space in the camper van on his own. And, you know, so we kind of, that's definitely, I feel that's coming more now, whereas I know for other families, even when they're little, they kind of need to have that space. And but I know that will continue to change as they get older, and I don't know how we'll manage that, because traveling with a family is, it's expensive, you know, it costs a lot. Mm-hmm. And the way we get around it is being able to all live in very close quarters when we're on the road.
Right.
So that will definitely be something that we'll just have to adjust and adapt as they
And interesting that it feels like now your family's moving into a different phase of sort of creating deeper roots. You know, maybe as you head into those, you know, preteen and teen years and young adult years, maybe that is a really good thing in the sense of you know, being able to, you know, have space and have their own things and create deeper friendships and things like that. Yeah. So it's interesting, Abe, as long as I think we have to be tuned in to the needs of our family. That's so important. Did you listen to the podcast episode where I interview, she's actually a neighbor of mine. They were city people and they always wanted to just homestead. And so did you listen to that one?
And they ended up buying that amazing piece of land, and now they've got cows and
everything. They just do everything.
And animals and Yeah.
And yeah, it
making
was just
cheese
such
cheese and bread.
I know, such a cool story, right? And so doable. You know, here they were not ever having done this in their life, and just boom, you know, we can do it, or we can travel, because the opportunity exists, I think, for all of a sudden to say, okay, you know what? We're going to take a year's break from the farm. We really want to travel before you guys start moving out of the house or whatever. And let's go. That's kind of one of the things that led us to go to Europe the first time was, okay, if we're going to go, it needs to be for a decent length of time. And we want to go before you guys have all left. Some of our kids had already left. And this is something we really, really meant a lot to us, right? So you have to be able to adapt along the way, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, we had a couple of different heartbreaking stories along the way where there was, you know, we'd meet families who were just saying, oh, I wish we traveled when our kids were younger. I wish we'd taken that opportunity, because we always thought there would be a better time and there would be opportunities in the future. And now suddenly they've left home, or they're teenagers and they don't want to come with us anymore, or, you know, different. And so they kept, you know, number of times people would come up to us and say, oh, well done for doing this. Well done. You know,
it's amazing. It really is.
Really surprised us. That idea of, you know, when you travel with the kids young, then they get more confident with that whole idea of a bit of discomfort when you are on the road, and you still get the amazing gains for it. And, you know, I know for a lot of people, the thought of kind of using a hole in the ground toilet or not having a hot shower for a few days at a time can be things that as adults, it completely puts us off traveling, or it can create so much anxiety that you then cannot absorb the learning or appreciate the beauty of the culture of where you are, because they're just not, you know, we haven't ever allowed ourselves to have that, you know, to kind of experience that discomfort. Whereas if they have that, or, you know, for Carl and I having experienced that as teenagers, that it would already then, it was fine. It was like, well, we've done it and we survived it. And it's not the most pleasant thing to be using a hole in the ground for a week. But actually the benefits of it were enough to weigh it, that we don't then mind putting our children in that situation as well, because we know that if we can cope with it, they'll be able to.
They'll be fine. It wouldn't be everybody's cup of tea, right?
Yeah.
There's also travel can also be different things in different situations. And so it doesn't always have to be sort of as rustic as, for most of us, to be affordable, it has to be simple, but it doesn't always have to be rustic. So I don't think that should be an impediment to travel either. Is like, okay, well, I might have to, you know, pee over a grate, or, you know, use a hole in the ground or whatever, that I couldn't cope with that. You know, there's other options, like Vancouver Island, for example. Although there are hiking
nice
trips
toilet.
Where that's necessary. Now, you had said you had a couple of questions as well for me.
Yes.
Should we dive in?
Yes, let's. Because I know, I mean, it's really lovely having interviews, but actually we're all really here for you. You know, listening to the podcast is all your nuggets. It's all those bits of important information. One of the questions that I had, actually, this has got nothing to do with travel, but something I was just really intrigued about, that it does come into travel too. But a lot of the time when you read to your children at breakfast and at lunchtime, one of the things I've always wondered is, when do you eat? When you're reading with them?
Okay, so I'll tell you something. Before I ever went online, so I was a blogger. I started blogging about, I don't know, 11 years ago, 12 years ago. And then I was at the same time giving live workshops and talking at conferences and whatnot. But so this, you know, the podcast is, you know, a new thing. And when I gave live workshops, somebody inevitably would ask that question, when do you eat? And it's such a great question, because so I would give a free book to whoever. Like, okay, you can just pick one of these
brilliant
books. Yeah. And so when do I eat? That's a great question. So I'm not a big eater. I don't have a big appetite, and I often don't eat first thing in the morning. So for me, that was easy, because I would just sit down and have my coffee while I read to the kids, and I would eat later on. Except when I was pregnant, when I just ate voraciously all day long, you know, and getting up in the night to eat as well. then I would usually get up, have something to eat, and then sit down with the kids and still have I'd always have my coffee. That was sort of part of the milieu for me, was being able to sit and enjoy my really good coffee and read to the kids. And it was this, you know, lovely moment. I never had coffee when I first woke up in the morning. I always saved that for my reading time. Right.
Okay.
So that's
then with lunchtime, you just put that around. This shouldn't be such an obsession, but I'm like, I just don't understand, because I have to read afterwards, because I'm like, otherwise if they're eating, I'd be spamming.
Like, you'd be so hungry.
And trying to eat and talk and read at the same time is very hard.
So for me, because I would eat sort of this mid-morning meal, say around 10 or 11, then, I mean, we always sat down and had supper together. That was, you know, I always sat with them at meals, but I was reading but not at supper. So I would always be eating with them at supper time. But at breakfast and lunch, I would not be eating and I would be having supper with them. So that sort of solved that problem for me, this mid-morning thing. But I think if I felt like reading with my kids at mealtime was really going to work, but I really needed to eat at that particular time, I would just eat first while they're, you know, getting dressed or, you know, kind of getting ready for the day. Then I would eat so that I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm so hungry. You know what I mean? I wouldn't want to put myself in a position that it was distracting. So I think I'd be inclined to feed myself first. And the other thing too, is as kids get older and they're waking up at different times, you know, they, and sometimes little kids, you know, you're up at 6 with your little ones, and the other ones I'm not reading till, you know, 8 or 8:30 or whatever, until everybody's kind of up and ready. Of course, I'm going to just feed them. But like all kids, they just eat all day long. So, you know, it doesn't matter what I put out, they're going to eat some of it. They were, you know, in their teens and they want a big, like they want a great big cooked breakfast, sometimes they would actually just sit down, listen to me read for a little while, and then get up and cook themselves the great big, you know, avocados and eggs and bacon and whatever, you know, whatever, you know, at 16 and 17, you just can't get enough food in those guys. We still all sat down. I made coffee, sometimes tea, you know, when my girls were home, I made tea or hot chocolate or whatever for the kids. So there was still always sitting, but people may have already had something to eat or might make themselves a meal afterwards as well, right? But there was always sort of the main breakfast feature was out on the table, and we would actually gather around. This is, just on a very pragmatic level. We had years ago, we used to, well, even recently, we visit a monastic guest house that's on the just outside of Vancouver. So it's on the, you know, a few hours for us to get there, but we would go there for family weekends, right? And it was really beautiful. And one of the things I noticed way early on when we started going there was that they served their food on a table, you know, kind of like a buffet, but small. There's only a group. There might be 10 to 20 people there at any given time. And all they have on the table is like a jug of water and the salt and pepper and the butter and whatnot. There's very little on the table. And I thought, I am going to do this at home. So our food is always on our kitchen island, and we say our grace and then we get our food and we take it to the table, because it's hard to imagine getting out the encyclopedias, getting out, looking at your maps, looking at all the stuff with all the food on the table as well. And plus the opportunity for spills and mess is so huge, you know, when you have little kids at a table. So that was something that I think really simplified my life, was just, okay, this is where the food goes. We get our food and we just take the plate to the table. Right.
Right.
And so funny thing, but just it's such a simple thing, but it really made a huge difference in how mealtime played out. Right. We even do that with our dinner, because there's not the pasta. It's just kind of calm when you sit down to eat.
And then anyone goes up separately to get seconds and comes down without having to lean over anyone else. Or go
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you to the monks for that little tip.
Because I find that ours love to have it. You know, if I'm reading, they love the idea of making tea and having it all laid out. And you know, it feels so fancy to come down and feel like it's kind of an occasion. It's not just an afterthought. It's like, this is the focus. And eating and drinking, I definitely see as, you know, it's just so special always in every culture to eat and drink together and to base things around a meal or a snack. But I find we have to do it more with snacks and the main meals. But maybe I need to just think more monastery-esque. Eat faster.
But you know, that's okay too. Like, I think the point is you're gathering, right? And food is our sort of main point of gathering in family life, really, food and bedtime. And so why not? So if it's a snack, great. You know, so I think that's what how it felt for me, was that this was special. You know, okay, we're, even though people are eating at, you know, different moments in the day or whatever, I'm eating different, this is special, right? We have our book, we have, it's cozy, we, I make you a hot chocolate and whipped cream, you know, if it's fall, I put the fire on, you know, it's a cozy time. And so I think that, that whether that would be, you know, while you have tea on the couch or while you're sitting down to have cookies in the afternoon or whatever, that, that just working around food seems to be really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? It is when we tell stories, and we don't have stories in our culture in the same way that other cultures do, which I'm sure is something you've bumped up against a lot, that our stories really come from the novels that we read together, because we don't have the same storytelling culture of traditional cultures.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Those stories that have been passed down generation. We don't have that oral storytelling culture in the same way. No, it is very special. Okay, thank you for clearing that. That's very helpful. So one of the other things that I was wondering, when you take breaks to go on vacation as a whole family, how much time would you spend, how much of that would just be pure relaxation? You don't need to be thinking or considering their learning at that point. And how much would you be doing learning on the road and kind of preparing the kids for where you were going and traveling to? How would you do that balance with the family?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So in terms of, you know, just a holiday, if we're going somewhere for a week or two, just for, you know, that's just relaxation. You know, we still, everything, because of the way we've chosen to educate our kids, everything is learning. So if we go to Mexico, for sure, we're looking it up on the map. We're finding out where we are. We're finding out the climate. You know, we're doing all those things and experiencing cultural things, because that's just how we roll, right? But if we were going on a big trip, our first really big trip we went on was a 5-week trip where we flew across the country, and we had been studying American history, which Canadians don't often do, right? We don't get much Canadian, American history in our school system here. We don't even get that much Canadian history, to tell you the truth, but we get zero American history. And so we thought, okay, we'd been studying American history, and I really wanted to go to the places of the Revolutionary War. And I wanted to go to Boston and the, you know, environs. And we also thought, okay, well, let's start in Canada and do some of our, because our Canadian history really starts back east, you know, in Quebec and early along the St. Lawrence, the early places in that, you know, people from France and England came here primarily and settled along the St. Lawrence. And so we thought, okay, well, let's do that and then drive down to the US. So it was a 5-week long trip. So we had really spent the school year studying American history. And when we decided we were also going to include Canadian history in this, we thought, okay, well, let's read some books on that. Let's read some novels set in old Quebec. You know, let's just kind of read and wonder and consider the places that we're going to. In general, I don't do any schoolwork while we're away. And it doesn't really matter how long we're gone for. I just feel like I don't want to say, for example, stop and do math. It's okay to not do math for 6 weeks. Like, who cares? You know, or whatever else, that all, we can just press the pause button on that. My husband has his own business, so we can't, it's not like we could go somewhere for months at a time. That would never be an option for us, because it's a manufacturing business. It's here. You know, we're fortunate to be able to take, you know, lots of weeks off, but not months off. You know what I mean? And so to me, in that case, I can just then press the pause button. This is what we're doing, and we're just going to delve into this. And so I just sort of let a lot of the learning unfold really naturally. I like to go to sort of living history type site, old plantations or old whatever, that has now become like a living history museum, so that you can just walk around and there's people who work there who are dressed in traditional costumes that are all handmade and, you know, that kind of thing. Or a place, we went to this one place in Quebec that made cannonballs. Wow. And so it's now a museum, like a park. And but they have the old, all the old cannonball stuff. So my husband and I read everything. We read every sign. Do you guys do that? Every sign, every post, everything. And so our kids are like,
but it's so amazing. You know, look how interesting this is.
Is there an animal?
So we would often just deploy information, right? So we would talk about it at the end of, you know, at the end of the day too. That was really important. It's like, wow, what was your favorite part of the day? And at the end of a trip, what was the highlight, right? What were the things that really stand out in your mind as that really had an impact on you on this trip, right? So we would just really pour ourselves into it. I have to tell you kind of a funny story. We went to Europe in, we took four kids to our youngest four kids. My youngest was six and the oldest was about, I think it was 15. So we went on that trip. We talked a lot about the places we were going in general before we left. But when we actually arrived, you know, we just kind of delved into it. We hired a lot of places, our own tour guide. Like here, tour guides don't have to be certified, right? But like in Italy, for sure, they have to be certified and really highly educated for their region that they're covering. Yeah, which is fantastic. And so we had, but because we were six people, it was cost effective just to hire our own person. Can we just hire you for the afternoon? Just show us what you think is the most important thing to see in Florence or whatever. We did a lot of that. And so much of the of what they learned was through that. But one of my kids was going to college the following year. He was making his college application. And so on his high school thing, his high school transcript, I just put, you know, went to Italy, right? That was his social studies. I was being a bit sassy. Went to Italy. And so then they phoned me and they said, you know, I understand there's, you know, learning and travel, but you know, went to Italy isn't really enough of a social studies course in our mind. Could you elaborate? I thought, okay, sure. And so I wrote a 3-page essay on everything we did about religion, history, you know, culture, all that stuff in this giant essay. And I said, I hope this will suffice. Yes, that was fine. Thank you very much. Yeah.
But I bet that was amazing for you to have that captured as well. Because I think that's what I find, you know, like sometimes when there's so much learning that we're doing in a place, then how do you capture that without our brain cells just slowly, all that beautiful and amazing information disappearing again? You know, people used to say to us, why would you, you know, is there any point traveling before the kids have memories when they're so tiny? But actually taking so many photos and putting together little photo books always for the kids, we found it was such an amazing way to capture it. And their photo memories of places were almost as precious as them having real memories, because they really felt so connected to places from having, you know, seeing photos of themselves in places. But now we've realized that as they've got older and technology is getting so much better, this idea of them being able to make little videos and that, in that place or straight after coming back, being able to record themselves, all their feelings and thoughts about it. And so we set up a little, about 4 years, 3 years ago, a little YouTube account for them called Born With A Backpack, where they've been making little videos and putting them on. And it was just for, you know, friends and family and to see them, but mostly for their own learning for the future, you know, and to be able to look back at it themselves and remember all these experiences they've had. But it's been really interesting because actually I've had so many teachers messaging me saying, like, we play these videos every year when we're learning about different countries.
So is it public now?
It is public, yes.
Oh, may I include the link in the show notes?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'll send you a link to it. They'll do an every sort of a few months ago, there's one on Argentina, they've done one on the salt flats of Bolivia and the Atacama Desert and Galapagos Islands, and we did a 5-day horse trek in the Andes, so they did a little one talking about that, and then I just edit it for them and they spend hours writing the script of all the things they want to include in it. And wow. But they're only all like 3 or 4 minutes long, but I think just to have that, like, a way of capturing it, because otherwise Yeah, like, you know, that's what I think when you're saying all about Italy, I was like, yeah, how amazing, like, for all of the children to look back at it and go, yeah, look what we did. Look yeah. at all the learning that happened while we were there.
We also put photo books together of different trips. But the other thing I've done is blogged my trips. So the big trips we've done, I have blogs for them. And at the time I thought, you know, I mean, maybe every 2 or 3 days I'd be spending, you know, a half an hour, 45 minutes blogging it. And I would think, you know, am I, is this just dumb? But I am so glad now that I did it, because you capture how you felt. Right.
Yes.
And that's something that I just love revisiting those and the funny things that happened and the silly stories that happened and whatnot. Then my kids have that they can look back on as well. I think video is the premier way, though. I think video, if we were doing something again, I think I'd video.
It is just amazing now that you have phones, how easy that is to be able to just
so easy. And you can just post it right then too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, free equipment to be able to just edit little videos together, edit photos and videos, and suddenly you've got this whole little package, a 3 minute long memory that just takes you straight back to where you were. And yeah, we've been very grateful for that technology. There's a lot of things about technology that aren't so good, but certainly that side of it has been really, yeah, been really great for us the last few years.
Yeah, it's kind of fun when you actually go on a holiday and you can't get reception, you know, because it's like, okay, let's just put that away.
Yeah, exactly. Except the camera still works. So that's really good.
I know.
I leave it on airplane mode just so that I can still take photos and videos, but don't have to worry about any other interaction.
Exactly, yeah. Did you have any other questions, or should we wrap up there?
Yeah, I think that the only last one would be, so you asked me where the best place that I found to travel with a family. For you, with your large family, what have you found as the easiest holiday with all those different ages? Kind of.
Yeah. So in terms of just a holiday where it's, you know, the intent is to just relax and have fun, do things together, we actually love Disneyland, right?
And okay.
And that might sound cheesy to somebody who's a hardcore traveler, but yeah. Interestingly, my son-in-law also has spent a huge amount of his life traveling, and he's also a huge Disney fan because it's so family oriented. You can go with your babies, you can go with your toddlers, you can go with your 8 and 10 year olds, you can go with your teens, you can go out on date nights yourself, you know, yeah. And leave the kids at the hotel. And we just found there's so much amazing entertainment and amazing family time that happened there, and very relaxing. Like, if you kind of get familiar with Disneyland, we go to the original Disneyland in California, right? And it's just very amazing. Retro. It's lovely, and it's an easy trip for us. But it was one of the places that we found to be just a nice, if we just need a getaway, that's where we would head, yeah. Because it was yeah. easy.
Everybody's the happy.
Exactly, yeah. So we didn't really start sort of more serious traveling until my youngest was 5, because I didn't want to be pregnant. I didn't want to. So once the sort of, yeah. Okay, I think that story's over now. Now we yeah. can start traveling. My husband loves to road trip. So we did this huge road trip, and that was really amazing. And then it was a year later, we went to Europe. I found most of Europe fantastic to travel with, like all through the small towns, and the driving was easy. The most of Italy, sorry, not Europe, was super easy. People were friendly and wonderful, and we loved it, but not Rome. Like, I found Rome was just intense and scary. We went a couple years ago as well. So everybody was quite a bit older, you know, like 6 years older. So it was much easier, but I was stressed even going there, because it okay. just felt like I was going to lose somebody. And you know, the crowds were intense and it was hot. And I think, you know, if you're going to travel with kids, stay away from big cities, unless you have a very controlled environment that you can do that. And either stay right downtown in a big city, right, so that you can kind of walk to wherever you're going to go. But in general, the small towns are so much more pleasant anyway. Would you
yeah,
say?
Or beach towns. Yeah, I absolutely agree. We try to avoid cities always, actually, just because I feel like most of the learning comes from the nature and the communities that are more outside of the big cities. It's hard to kind of find those same interactions in the same way and, yeah, meet people when pace of life is at a fast.
Exactly. And it's mostly, you know, tourists, right? So it's not the same as, you know, even when you stay in a small town, the people generally want to chit chat with you. They want to find out where you're from, you know, and it's just such a pleasant experience. where the cities just don't have the same. Of course, there's some things in cities that we want to see, but I don't know, it was just so much more value in the small towns. So thank you so much. This has been absolutely delightful. Can people get a hold of you via Instagram if they have questions or comments about our show? And your Instagram, I'll put the link in the...
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's Alice Adele Brown, but I'll put it in.
Alice Adele Brown. Okay, all one word. And yeah, and your Instagram account is stunning. So the photographer in you. Are you actually trained as a photographer professionally?
Yes, I am. Yes, yes. So, but I do more portrait photography, and that was really nice in Argentina to be able to just, because I wasn't able to work as a speech therapist there, given Spanish being my second language. But it was amazing to be able to really develop photography and do portrait photography there. So that was
fantastic. Well, we'll have to work towards a house swap or something.
Oh, now that's an idea. Yes. That sounds like the dream.
So we'll keep in touch. That'll keep us in touch. What part of England are you in?
Well, it's funny, we're also in Kent as well. So
you're
a friend at the same time. It's kind of, we're in Tunbridge Wells.
Oh.
So yeah, just kind of 45 minutes from London.
Okay. Oh, well, you'll have to connect with Zoe.
Oh, do you know, I think my sister knows her. I think my sister Joy is a good friend of Zoe's. Actually, she told me that she...
You're kidding. Yeah, she's fabulous. So her and I want to meet. We talked about meeting in Greenland or Iceland or something. Let's meet somewhere. It would be so fun. Okay, well, God bless and have a wonderful rest of your day, rest of your night for
you. Thank you.
Okay.
Very lovely to speak to you. Thank you.
You too.